Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greeting friends around the world, this is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. You're living in a time of shocking predictions, a time of social turmoil and revolt, of challenging the old ideas and accepting new ones, when people are so scared about the present they don't dare think about the future, and when almost everyone jumps on the bandwagon of trying to predict the way your future is going to be. And nearly every time you're fairly safe if you begin by wondering whether or not you're going to have a future, such as Ernest Mayer, who was director of the Harvard Museum of Comparative Zoology, who said, and I quote, in L.A. Times recently, a major newspaper on the west coast of the United States, that we may soon know whether man will survive. Now, that's not very comforting, that we may soon know whether man will survive, but that's what he said. But when you get the rest of it, it's really frighteningly accurate when you stop to think about it. If you take a complete, broad, sweeping look at the entirety of the panorama of human experience today, of massive India, with the recent visit by the head of that state, Mrs. Indira Gandhi, to the United States to talk over the problems of poverty and starvation and additional foreign aid and additional shipments of wheat and the like to India. When you take a look at the population explosion, the massive problems of the land mass of Asia, the problems of Borneo and Indonesia, the problems of the Jew-Arab strife and what's happening in Aden and Yemen, and the problems of a dwindling navy and dwindling economic and military power of Great Britain and the loss of her overseas possessions, the internal problems of the big so-called have nations, the islands of plenty and prosperity in the midst of starving millions of people, such as the United States and Great Britain and certain of the democracies of northwestern Europe, where we have deepening and worsening sociological problems and problems of insoluble race anxiety and fear, race riots, mounting crime, divorce, everybody with his hand in the till, trying to jerk the rug out from under the boss, increased licentiousness and pornography. Not only the social disease of those that have too much and don't know how to handle it, but the fantastic problems even in the weather, where the weather and natural calamities seem to be against us. Unbelievable earthquakes in China, of such a magnitude so as to measure so high on the Richter scale, clear over in Central Europe, that had they been in some heavily populated area, it could have taken thousands of lives. Now, when you take a look at around the world and the entire picture, then you can put this statement of this director of the Harvard Museum of Comparative Zoology in its proper perspective. He said, we may soon know whether man will survive. Now listen to the rest of it. In the light of the total scope of world experience, either some cataclysmic event such as a nuclear war will end man's tenure on Earth, or, through a tremendous effort of self-control, he will make a new start. One or the other probably will take place in the lifetimes of people now living. If the other takes place in the lifetimes of people now living, they will not be lifetimes, but death times, and they won't be living, but just so much incinerated nothingness, drifting aimlessly on an old wrecked hulk through space for all eternity. Well, now it is a time of predictions of the future. And on the one hand, in this unsettled, nervous, frightening time of ours, everyone wants to predict a glittering world of glamour and leisure and pleasure and laziness with no cares, no fears, no worries, and using pills to take care of whatever ails you. On the other hand, they predict the destruction of mankind, and you can take your pick as to which you would like to believe. Now, as I've been saying on the World Tomorrow program recently, the present is so frightening to most people that we try to escape from it, and we don't want to think about the present, let alone about the future. People will hurry by when they are asked on the street by pollsters, what do you think about this or that, or what would you do in the case of a nuclear attack? Well, that's not my problem, they say. I want to get busy with something else. They just don't want to think about it. So as I've been saying on the World Tomorrow, because of the frightening present in which we live, escapism is just about the biggest business today. In all of its forms and guises, the biggest of all, the most obvious of all, of course, is the entertainment field. Multi-billion dollar industries affecting so much of our thought, our very language, all of our social customs and institutions is this entertainment field of ours. And I don't care whether you live in Australia, where people are so sports-minded, and Bondi Beach and all the rest of it,
Whether you live in Great Britain, where gambling mania now grips people, and we have an article in the current number of the Plain Truth magazine on that, the almost insatiable desire to play, to gamble, to get something for nothing, to do anything to satiate the seemingly insatiable gnawing void for pleasure, for excitement, for something to fill your mind that people are experiencing in Great Britain. To the great social welfare states of Sweden and up in Denmark, where people want to play. You think of Denmark, you think of Tivoli. Well, there's a reason for that. Because we want to play. We want to fiddle while Rome burns. And so today the entertainment field is a massive, monumental, tremendous industry. And a lot of people, as I said recently, can just about name as many personalities in the entertainment field as they can their own personal friends or relatives. And they can tell you just about as much of what they at least think they're doing about their latest wives, husbands, fights, divorces, or what have you, as they can personalities that they're supposed to know. So the present is so frightening, we like to blot everything out of our minds. One fella put it exactly that way. He said, look, if the world is going to come to an end, please let it happen while I'm watching Gunsmoke. Now, I'm sure you've heard of that, even in Australia, because I remember when it was running over there. So that's another thing the United States has exported around the world, our Westerns. Now, people in London and Australia, we don't really wear guns over here. I live about as far west as you can get. Too much further, and I'd be in the Pacific Ocean. And we don't go around with guns shooting Indians anymore, but you know, a lot of people seem to think we do. Because this one little fleeting part of American history in just a few little towns for a little while, nowhere near as dramatic as they made it, it lasted all of 4 years, has been blown up to become about the biggest segment of American history that most people know of in many parts of the world. So we spend billions and billions of dollars to keep modern man from going insane in the frightening world he has built for himself. And the spectacle of seeing well-dressed, important-looking businessmen sitting down to a luncheon steak and grabbing their pill flask to gulp a pink, a green, and a white before they take their steak is quite common today. It's been said that a truly balanced man is the man that has his thrill pills or his pep-up pills in complete harmony and balance with his tranquilizers. And to show you that people are not so far off when they predict the world of pills in the future, and this is one of the major predictions for the future of mankind, an article in a well-known weekly news magazine entitled Looking Toward AD 2000. As I was saying, people want to predict the future today, and here's another one. In a Time essay in Time magazine recently, nearly all experts agree that bacterial and viral diseases will have been virtually wiped out by 2000. Now, that's a very fine prediction. They agree. The experts agree. Of course, all the experts agreed that Fulton would never succeed, and all the experts said that the Wright brothers would never fly. Now they claim that all the diseases are going to be wiped out. Well, we'll see. Now they said probably heart disease will also have been eliminated by that time. That's not very good news for those who have it now. But they went on to say, and I wonder if they weren't a little bit tongue-in-cheek on this, drug control of personality will be widely accepted well before the year 2000. Now, here's the way they spell it out, this wonderful world of drug control. If a wife or a husband seems to be unusually grouchy on a given evening, now, upon whose standard? Well, the one who thinks the other is grouchy. A spouse will be able to pop down to the corner drugstore, buy some anti-grouch pills, and slip them into the coffee. Or a lackadaisical person could be dosed into a sense of ambition. Now, there are a few problems with that. Let's assume that you're in the giant insurance company or something, and you want to get the boss's job. Everybody admits that they do, and of course, people in Management Magazine claim that they got where they were by dirty methods, and they say they would do it again, just like the college student who says, sure, I cheat, doesn't everybody? And given the opportunity, I would do so again. So, you have the white-collar worker, and he figures, hey, that boss is sure energetic today. I'll pop down to the corner drugstore, or better yet, just bring a supply with me to the office of repressant pills. Of lackadaisical pills. I'll slip them in his coffee. He becomes lackadaisical. I take a pep-up pill. I get his job. The next day, the other fellow realizes what has happened, so he slips the new boss a lackadaisical pill. He takes a pep-up pill, and they change jobs again. Now, this was a serious magazine. Time magazine's not a comic book. These were serious statements, and yet it's almost funny when you stop to think about it, when you really try to take such a statement and walk along through life with it. Try to put it into action, into effect, and think of such a world of anti-grouch pills, of pep-up pills to help lackadaisical people, of plastic organs and little things attached to your heart that are automatically winking lights on a computer in your doctor's office miles away. These are serious-minded predictions by scientists, technologists, industrialists, people in the pharmaceutical fields, and doctors, and zoologists, and historians, and almost everybody has a hand at it today, predicting the future, that is. So they predict all the diseases will be wiped out and then talk about all these pills they're going to give us. And then they went on to say in this Time essay, it will become possible eventually to control the shape or color of men to come. Now, who's going to control them? That's what worries me. Now, I would like to be able to control my own shape, and I control it by watching what I eat and then by getting a certain amount of exercise. Now, generally, in a season, I can get up to about 5 practices of basketball per week, about an hour to an hour and a half of basketball per day, which will give me a real good perspiration. So that allows me to go ahead and eat a good steak sandwich for lunch, and it allows me to go ahead and to eat a pretty good diet, yet avoiding a whole lot of fats and starches and sweets. I doubt if I eat any kind of dessert more than twice a year. Now, that's not saying you should do what I do. That's just what I do. And I haven't gained 1 pound since I got out of the Navy in 1952, and I weighed 147 then and weigh the same. So I don't want anybody slipping pills in my coffee. And I don't want somebody else deciding whether or not I would look better with a 150-pound bay window, which would add to what I've got, make me well over 200. And a lot of people are walking around with about that kind of weight. It's a lot less height than I have. Now, who would decide what color you're to be? The white people who are not truly white, as a lot of civil rights workers will tell you. They'll say their shirts are white, but they're not. What have become dark? So we lie around on the beach, and we get burnt as dark as we possibly can. Or people even rub it on out of a bottle today, and that's a big industry, too. People want to make themselves look darker than they are. So white people want to be dark, and dark people want to be light. They have creams and things like this to make their skin look lighter. Isn't it a travesty and sort of a treatise on human nature that there are so many Negro people who naturally might have curly or kinkier hair, who use all kinds of wax and things to try to pull it out, make it straight? Then there are all the white people, generally the Caucasian people in the Western world, who have oval or flat hair, which means, it will vary. Sometimes in Britain and other nations, you'll see a lot of curly-headed people, but primarily we'll see the long, straight hair, the blondes and the Nordics. And, of course, today in the teenage world, why the girls are wearing their hair just hanging straight down. And I think they do that because it bounces and flops around more while they do the Watusi. So, but in times past, they wanted it to be curled and kinky. And the big business was in the old electric curling iron and all the hair sets and the hair waves and all of the various hair dryers that people have. And the instant sprays and the hair sets, so that the white people who generally have hair that is not real kinky want to make it so. Nobody's satisfied. Everybody wants to change. Well, it says men will become, possibly, eventually, they will become able to control their own shape. But who's going to control your shape? You or somebody else? Who's going to decide what color you should be? That's the part that worries you about it. Now, you go to another prediction that occurred recently. And this was in the Minneapolis Morning Tribune, where a famous science editor of a well-known New York magazine said tomorrow's world will be a world of plenty. And I want you to listen to this fantastic self-contradiction. A world of plenty, a world of increased brotherly love, in fact, infinitely richer and better than any world that ever existed. Now, he was speaking before a women's club in Minneapolis, and he said this, that he could share a great faith and hope with that club that day because he said there will be a next 100 years. And he said the hope and faith he had in the fact we would have another 100 years of man's experience is based upon the atomic age and the benefits it offers to the rest of the world. Now, the reasons for that faith, he said, are, quote, the United States has sufficient atomic weapons to keep communist nations at bay. We could destroy both Russia and China in a few hours, and they know it. Now, take a look at that at face value. It's as if so many of us assume that we're going to live in an island of plenty, that we're going to go on and develop and grow and have more and more of the things that we think are going to make life happy. All of these fantastic advances in medicine, the complete destruction and abolition of all disease, the annihilation of all poverty, A glittering glamour world like a gigantic Disneyland of push-button ease and pleasure.
The meanwhile, keeping the rest of the hungry, starving world, the rest of the illiterate and the ignorant world, the rest of the world in turmoil, social revolution, filled with hatred and jealousy of the have nations, the poverty-stricken millions of the world, keeping them at bay with our growing arsenal of atomic weapons. Isn't that exactly what he said? He said he had hope for the future for 100 years, and that hope and faith, and I didn't say this, he did, I'm quoting what he said, I don't have a corner on predictions.
He said he could share that hope and faith based upon atomic energy and the fact that we have these nations sort of standing in the shadow of a bomb, and they know it. Now, that doesn't quite make sense to me. It's sort of self-contradictory. It doesn't seem to admit all the facts that a few nations could depend upon a prediction such as this of holding other nations at bay with the threat of nuclear war while they themselves increase and increase in dizzying glamour to the height of a fantastic epitome of a gross national product unparalleled in the history of mankind. Meantime, wives controlling grouchy spells of their husbands by slipping to the corner drugstore for a package of pills. Well, isn't it about time we began to admit the entire panorama of human experience? Isn't it about time in our predictions we began to see it all? That we began to see the population explosion? India with its starving millions, China with its starving millions, its drought and famine, its earthquakes. That we began to see the emerging industrial giant of Japan, that we began to see the fantastic rise to economic and now military power of a future United States of Europe. Isn't it about time we began to take a look at these hungry millions and begin to decide for ourselves they are not going to conveniently remain quiet and starve to death in peace and quiet and not bother us in our glittering glamour world of frills and pills and chills and spills? Isn't it about time we began to admit to ourselves the way the world literally is today? And then ask, what kind of a future can we expect? And I'll tell you, there is only one source that does all of that, that does not seek to escape from the facts, and that does tell you the entire picture, that admits the world would get this bad, that isn't afraid to face reality, and doesn't deal with pills, which after all are only treating the effect, but gets right to the root of the cause. What caused the grouchy spell in the first place? Well, wrong character. Uncontrollable human nature, which is vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, selfishness. That's what causes it all. And so, of course, this source of which I speak deals with the cause, which is human nature. And it's a broad, sweeping plan which will work. Now, you look at the predictions of man, of how to solve his problems, and every single time you come up with this blank wall, this giant leap into nowhere, that what we must have. Now, I want to just quote for you succinctly the combined opinions of dozens of educators, of historians, of philosophers, and of political leaders over the course of years. And these include historians who write the textbooks that are being studied by people in the leading universities of today, geopoliticians and others. When they talk about the future of mankind in general, every last one of them admit that the ultimate salvation of the human race, so far as its perpetuation on this earth is concerned, rests in the creation of a world-ruling government. One major world-ruling government, which will have the power to control all of the world. A world police force. A world crime detection system. One world language. One world calendar. That's a fact. I mean, that is the combined opinion of the greatest thinkers that the world has ever produced. And yet, every last one of those predictions come to that same great chasm. That resting in the hands of man, any such one world government is absolutely impossible. Because knowing the instability of human nature, the insurmountable problems of individual nations with their own chauvinism and nationalism, and the individual grasping jealousies and greeds of individual leaders within individual nations. Take a look at what's been happening in Indonesia lately, where a man sought to put himself on the pinnacle of success and in his latter years surrounded himself with wives and concubines and the automobiles and the luxury and the trip abroad and the whole bit. And all he did is succeed in alienating himself from the very people that he hoped would keep him in office, until finally he found himself in a whole lot of trouble. And so you look at the way human beings have reacted down through history to each bright young leader who came along to deliver them from all of their problems. You think about Cuba of a few years ago. You think about Haiti. You think of many a revolutionist, many a great deliverer of the past. And what happens? A despot replaces a despot. A dictator puts down a dictator. And so we have the whole cycle all over again. And man's experience, as it's been put down in the history books down through the years, has been nothing more than searching for a way to peace. Nothing more than a striving for a fantastic utopia, trying to create a kind of a social revolution that is finally going to result in everybody having plenty of everything. That's exactly what man has been after in all of his colors, languages, and tongues, in all of his political movements from the time Cain slew Abel. It's been what man has been after. To create a better world, to have a great society, a grand design, a glittering glamour world of plenty, a utopia of better things. And look where we are today. 2 + 2 = 4. And man seeking for peace has brought himself to the place where you read things in your newspapers your grandmother and grandfather would have gone pale to read of. Can you imagine somebody grappling with cables deep in an undersea canyon for a bomb that has more explosive force than all of the blasts, all of the crack and stutter and pop of combined rifles, machine guns, mortars, bazookas, bombs, and all combined forces of explosion unleashed by all sides in the entirety of World War II? Isn't it a fantastic age in which we live? Where airplanes going overhead at fantastic speeds, breaking the sonic barrier, are carrying 2 or 4 or more hydrogen bombs of multi-megaton explosive force in the bomb bay? Isn't it a fantastic age where nuclear submarines traverse the entirety of the Earth undersea without surfacing? Isn't it a fantastic age where they go under the polar ice cap? A fantastic age where men strap themselves on the back of a giant bullet and go clattering off into space to orbit around the Earth? A fantastic age when you hear of increased natural disaster, increased weather activity and revolution in the weather that frightens meteorologists and weathermen, where you read of millions about to starve, where you read of social revolution as never before, wars and rumors of wars as never before, and yet at the same time, these glowing predictions of hubby being quieted down by a tranquilizer that the wife just got from the drugstore. Well, there's only one source to which you can go to put this all together and get some sense out of it and have a little bit of faith for the future after all, because I can't have faith in the future listening to these completely impractical, self-contradictory statements about anti-grouch pills from scientists and pharmaceutical engineers or whatever they are, and science editors of magazines who talk about tomorrow's world of brotherly love because we're going to keep all the millions at bay with our atomic and hydrogen bombs. I can't believe in that kind of a world. I can believe in the kind of a world that is portrayed in your Bible. Now, don't get shocked. We don't get shocked when we hear people singing, you know, all kinds of weird songs about where have all the young boys gone. They've gone to graves, every one. We hear all the pacifist songs, the rest of them today, about the hopelessness, the wailing, whining, moaning funeral dirges they call music today. Help me, or I want to hold your hand, because I'm scared. And I'm frightened, and you're not quite sure who wants to hold whose hand either, as far as that's concerned. But I take a look at the Bible, and I see the exact answer. I see that here is the prediction of a world-ruling government, that here is world crime detection, that here is one world language, one world calendar, that here is the absolute answer to the whole story that almost everybody claims is the only solution to the ills of mankind today, and yet instead of talking about tranquilizers and dealing with the effect, it gets right to the root of the cause, which is human nature itself, and talks about the alteration of human nature, talks about the changing of the nature and the mind of man, so hubby doesn't grouch in the first place, and instead of having to slip to the corner drugstore to buy a pill to quiet him down, he comes home with a smile on his face regardless as to his problems. Now, that's a fact. I know that sounds weird because you've never realized before that Jesus Christ of Nazareth was not just a sort of a charlatan who came along with a plot to try to make himself appear as the Messiah. Neither was he an impractical teacher who had a lot of ideas that were sort of useless when you look at him real close, like a lot of people think. But he was a prophet. Now, everybody else has a crack at predicting what they think is going to happen in the future. Have you ever heard what Christ had to say about it? Let's see if this was accurate. Here's one little section of the Bible, one of the most important parts, for that matter, of prophecy. It's in Matthew, the first book of the New Testament in the 24th chapter where Jesus Christ was asked what would be the signs in world news, what would be the conditions on this earth involving everything. And he talked here about weather, about disease, he talked about social revolution, about wars and everything. What would be the entire scope of human experience which would signal that this great cataclysmic event that Dr. Meyer talked about would be imminently ahead in world conditions? What Christ called the end of the age, meaning this end of this age and the beginning of a new one. We all talk about the grand design or the great society or the new era or the age beyond. Well, that's what Christ talked about. He predicted a new age. He said there would be a lot of religious deception. Well, now, you know a lot of people with whom you disagree, so regardless as to which guise and which label you think, at least that is true. Now, the next thing he said in verse 6 of Matthew 24, and you shall hear of wars and rumors of wars. What's your newspaper filled with? I know what mine says, and unless you live somewhere where you don't even get the news, and you are hearing of wars and rumors of wars, and the biggest, most continuous news, the biggest thing on most people's minds today that is causing riots, demonstrations, flag tearings, and effigy burnings and hangings around the world is Vietnam. Wars and rumors of wars. But he said, see that you be not troubled, for all these things must come to pass, but the end is not yet. For nation shall rise against nation, and kingdom against kingdom, and there shall be famines. Now, this seems like it's so out of date until you think, here's Mrs. Indira Gandhi. And she sits down with the president, and they have nice, long, personal chats. And what are they talking about? How would you like to live in a city of about 3 million where they were going to give out exactly 675,000 ration cards? Would you be in line early? How would you like to live in a nation where you know absolutely 50% every other tomato, every other grain of wheat is destroyed every year because of insects and rodents and poor storage? How would you like to live in a nation where the average life expectancy is 29 and where every other baby dies in its first year? I know a lot of people who do. This is not so out of date. You've got one leader of the second largest nation on the face of the earth, population-wise, sitting down and talking to the leader of one of the biggest glittering have nations, the richest nation on earth, saying, help us, we're hungry. Anything out of date about Christ's predictions? And there shall be famines. You better get this current number of the Plain Truth magazine in full color throughout. And here's a color picture taken in India. The cause of poverty. Showing how 2 billions of people live at a bare subsistence level. And the hand-to-mouth existence of people in India, Africa, and Latin America might be understandable. But what about the millions in the United States and Britain that are becoming poverty-stricken? What about these affluent nations that are beginning to be stricken by weather, too? And he said there shall be pestilences, and there are disease epidemics. I came back to L.A. not so long ago and got in the middle of one. We had millions absent from schools and jobs. Millions were stricken, not just hundreds of thousands, millions with the Asian flu. And when you get it, you don't think it's quite so simple. He said pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. You've been reading newspapers lately? I wasn't over there shaking China, but somebody was. You better get the Plain Truth magazine. It's absolutely free of charge. There's no price for it. I'll have to break off here and continue with this next time. So write for the Plain Truth, these articles I've mentioned. It's free of charge and no price if you send your letter to Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. That's Herbert W. Armstrong, Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address again in just a moment. Listen next time. This is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.